Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio, and it's the start of NASCAR week here on Fan Junkies Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, Mike McShane. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how we doing today, Jonathan? NASCAR week, man. Couldn't ask for anything much more than that, huh?
I know you're happy.
You got it. This is cool.
This is Christmas for you, man.
Lots of racing, too, over this past weekend, which we're going to get into during the show.
Absolutely. But before we start off, just a little somber news here. As reported on Twitter just about an hour ago,
yeah.
Lakers owner Jerry Buss has passed away out in Los Angeles. He was 79 years old.
Yep.
You know, when you talk about Jerry Buss, Mike, you're talking about one of the premier owners that we've seen in all sports.
Yep.
What he did for Los Angeles and for the Los Angeles Lakers franchise, you know what, you can't talk enough about. 10 championships since he's bought the team since, I believe, 1979 he bought the team.
79, correct. For, I believe it was like 60-some million dollars.
Yeah, $67.5 million.
There
and,
you go.
He's owned them since 79, and they're now worth $1 billion, Mike.
Wow. I mean, that's a self-made story in many, many respects. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Jonathan. The guy was truly a giant. You know, like so many from that region, you know, known for his kind of flamboyancy, I guess, you know, but really, just you gotta give him a lot of credit.
Absolutely. Now let me ask you this: you know what? When he bought the Lakers, and you know he wanted to introduce Showtime and everything, he said he wanted the Lakers to be synonymous with Los Angeles. At that point, it was all Dodgers there.
Yeah.
Do you think the LA is more Lakers than Dodgers now? I mean, I would have to say it is, right?
Ooh! Wow. Oh, wow. I don't know. You know, that's one to throw out to callers. Do we have anybody from Los Angeles listening? You know, that's a really good question. I still think there's a heck of a lot of Dodger blue flying around out there.
Which I'm sure there is, but is is L.A. now a Lakers town? And has it been since, you know, for many, many years now?
Yeah.
You know, with them winning 10 titles, I mean, you got titles in 80, 82, 85, 87, 88, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2009, and 2010. There was really no room in there for the Dodgers to do anything.
Yeah, you know, you make a really, really interesting, that's a very, very interesting observation. And it's a tough one for me to call because I don't, obviously, I'm not from that region.
Yeah.
347-237-5373. If there's anybody from LA, let us know.
Yeah, I mean
is that a Dodger town or is that a Laker town?
At least us on the East Coast, at least to some of us, it looks like a Lakers town from over here. So
yeah, great question. And you know, if that's the case, then really you got to put that right at the feet of Jerry Buss.
Yeah, Dr. Jerry Buss passed away today at the age of 79, so our condolences to the Buss family, to the Lakers franchise and family, and of course to the Lakers fans because they love this guy, Mike, and you know, rightfully so. He gave Lakers fans something to cheer for when he bought that team. So.
Absolutely.
It's a shame he passed away. Like I said, one of the premier owners in the league, but Jerry Buss gone at 79. So once again, our condolences out to everybody there. Let's do our hat tricks here, Mike. Both got hat tricks yesterday, but unfortunately it doesn't count in our league because we're only counting the days we have radio shows here.
And we both got one. We both got one.
Yeah, yesterday was a very, very predictable day, and we both ended up getting a hat trick. So let's see what we could do here.
Wait a minute. You're discounting our hat tricks there by saying it was a very predictable day. I spent hours.
As soon as I picked them yesterday, I said, I'm getting a hat trick today. I didn't expect all of us to get a hat trick, but.
I spent hours researching those.
No, you didn't. You did. You were too busy watching races yesterday.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, so let's start the three quick questions here. Will Brian Campbell of the Florida Panthers have an assist tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, currently with 4 goals and 4 assists in 14 games, I'm answering no.
I'm answering no as well. Second question, Which team will win between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Montreal Canadiens?
Tough call. This one's pretty close, actually, but I'm going with the Canadiens.
I'm going to Habs as well. Which team will win between the Calgary Flames and the Phoenix Coyotes tonight?
This one doesn't look like it should be close, but it kind of is, and I'm going to go with the Coyotes.
I'm going for the Yotes as well. So if we get them all right, we both get hat tricks, we'll be tied tonight. If not, we're still going to be tied at zero. So
how could that be possible? That would be two hat tricks in a row. That's just not even doable. The only one that does that is Brandon.
There's leaders here with 11 and 10 and 9, and come on. It'll happen.
Right.
If anybody wants to get involved with that,
yeah,
just go to hattrick.nhl.com and look for the Fan Junkies Radio League. Come on in and see if you can get more hat tricks than we can, because I'm sure you can.
We're just getting warmed up, though, Jonathan.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about. I mean, we're just getting.
So, you know.
I mean, you're joking, you know, how I watched racing. Yeah, and I did watch a lot of racing this weekend. But let's not forget, it was hockey weekend across America.
Yes, it was hockey.
And I watched a lot of hockey.
Hockey day in America on Sunday.
Yesterday, yes.
Yes, and my Rangers won, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn it over to basketball real quick before we get to our special guest, Sean Corr from Empire Racing. Sean Corr had a very, very big weekend, and we'll definitely talk about that with Sean. But before we do that, let's turn it over to the NBA All-Star Game, Mike.
Oh, do we have to, really?
Yeah. we had the West won, 143 to 138, a total of 281 points for this game, Mike.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of question marks for me for this game. I used to love the NBA All-Star game. I don't enjoy it no more. Mm-hmm. I haven't for quite a time now. I used to enjoy the three-point shootout and the slam dunk contest. I haven't for a while. Still, to me, the three-point contest is still a little exciting, but the slam dunk, it's done. What's been done has been done, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It lost its excitement many years ago. Now, let's talk about this. 143 to 138. Chris Paul, MVP. Chris Paul had 20 points. 15 assists for the West team was, played a very good game, Mike. But at the same time, if Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng and Jrue Holiday and Kyrie Irving actually played defense, you probably wouldn't have saw 20 points and 15 assists.
Well, no.
Now, I had a message from you early this morning, Mike.
Yes.
That I walk up to. And
that's usually when you're getting messages from me, because I'm sending them out overnight.
Yeah, I like to get sleep. You like to stay up and scream at me in messages about the NBA. So, real quick, and I'm going to read this to you. Are you kidding me? 281 points between the two teams. What a ridiculous joke. End quote from our very own Mike McShane. Mike, why do you not like the All-Star game?
Are you kidding me? This is, you just said, I mean, if there were any defense, and I made comments about this game on Saturday during our broadcast here on Fan Junkies Radio Network, 5 minutes at the Pratt House. And I was asking listeners, is anybody really going to watch this game? 281 points, Jonathan, this is a disgrace.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it has got to be, in my opinion, it is the second worst All-Star presentation of the major four sports.
Yeah,
the Pro Bowl's got to be number one. Number two.
Nothing touches the Pro Bowl, by the way. Nothing can come near the Pro Bowl.
You just said it. Had there been any defense in this game, there's the operative phrase. Had there been any defense at all, why in the world they ought to just make this a half court thing. This is stupid.
Well, you know what? Let me ask you this now. Chris Paul winning the MVP. Does the All-Star MVP even mean anything anymore? Because really, barely any defense is played in the All-Star game. Years ago, you used to have guys that wanted to compete and show themselves up on probably the greatest stage the NBA had at that point, which was the NBA All-Star game. Now, I mean, if you look at it right away, you have Kevin Garnett in the East starting lineup, right?
Yep.
6 minutes, that was it he played.
Yep.
As soon as he came out in the first quarter, he was done for the game. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Tim Duncan. Came off the bench, played 8 minutes, that was it, he was done. Other players, LaMarcus Aldridge is only 11 minutes. Listen, I understand everybody that's there, they want to see the LeBron James, they want to see the Carmelo Anthonys, they want to see the Dwight Howards and the Kobe Bryants. But years ago, when you had guys like Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley and Karl Malone, they wanted to show each other up. So they played defense, they played offense, and if you could score in this game, that was huge.
Yeah.
You don't see that no more.
Well, and you started out your comments by saying that you used to watch this game and you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I'm on record, I'm basketball, I follow it. I'm not the biggest, enormous NBA basketball fan, but I follow it, and I have followed it for years and years and years.
Hmm.
And like yourself, I used to enjoy watching the All-Star game. You know, now, I did not, I'm here to tell you right now, I didn't watch one single minute of it.
No,
I did not watch one single minute.
I turned on the three-point contest just to see what Steve Novak did for the Knicks, and once Novak was done and I knew he wasn't going to round two, shut it off. You know, because like I said, the three-point contest, it could still be exciting because that's something that's always been the same. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't particularly like the choices that they made for contestants. I think they could have done a lot better job. I mean, years ago when you had the Larry Birds, I mean,
yep.
You had these big-name players, Mike.
Yes.
And then here we had, who do we have? Ryan Anderson, Matt Bonner, Steve Novak. I mean, these are people that really nobody across the league knows unless it's the hometown state.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm looking at the footnotes, too, in the box score here, Jonathan. For the Western Conference All-Stars, fast break points, 38.
Yes.
38 fast break points, all right?
Not even that. Look at the points in the paint.
Yes, 88. Total team turnovers for the West, 15, all right?
Total
when
the
you
East, 20.
Yep.
So?
I'd almost love to see this whole exhibition just get rid of it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's you know what? It's definitely going to come to that time. I don't think they'll get rid of it. I think they're going to have to do something to rejuvenate it, Mike. You know, it's, you know, listen, if the NBA is making money off of it, they're not getting rid of it. And they made money off of it. So,
well, there's no doubt they did. And that's why, you know, well, we talked about this. This is why they keep having these ridiculous exhibitions like the Pro Bowl and the NBA All-Star game.
Because it's people are dumb enough to pay and, you know.
Correct.
You know, and they're going to continue to make money off of something that's really not entertaining, unfortunately. You know, years ago, I was crazed to go to an NBA All-Star game. Now I don't even watch it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way it is. So, unfortunately, you know, they killed it for us. But at the same time, it's over, so we don't even have to look at it or deal with it anymore after today. So.
Yeah, right. There it is. So there's our comment until next year at this time.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about the All-Star game next year. And, you know, Mike will probably watch it and go. So.
And I'll be sending you notes at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Probably. Unless you get tickets and you actually go yourself, Mike. So.
No, I would not.
No. All right, well, guess what? It's now the start of our NASCAR/racing week here on Fan Junkies Radio. It could have started Friday when we had John Capps on from the NHRA,
yep.
But we wanted to talk to John and, you know, separate from all of this, and we wanted to really focus on the three guests that we're having this week for our NASCAR Racing Week on Fan Junkies Radio here. So joining us right now is driver Sean Corr from Empire Racing. Sean, are you there?
Yes, sir. How you guys doing?
Sean, how are you?
Pretty good.
I bet you are. Congratulations, huh? You had a pretty good race on Saturday.
Yeah, we the whole team, we did pretty good. So everybody was busting their butts all season, and I'm just happy it paid off for the race.
Well, pretty good. I mean, let's let the listeners know you came in top five. In fact, you came in fifth in that particular race down at the Indianapolis International Speedway.
Daytona. Yeah, we came in fifth. We started 18th, which
yep.
was we ended up missing the test for the ARCA race back in December, and we kind of figured that the car, we didn't really mess with anything. We're putting the same style engine and all in, and Ford now has their new FR9 motor out, which is the latest and greatest, but we figured if the car is as good as it was last year, we weren't going to touch anything. And going into it, we didn't qualify as well as we were hoping it would, like last year, but I'm just happy that that car was able to race much better than it qualified.
Absolutely. Now, Sean, let's talk a little bit about your career leading up to Saturday's race. You know, we were looking at some of your stats on Racing Reference and a few other sites. First of all, let me ask you this. What exactly is the ARCA Racing Series? Because a lot of our listeners that are listening, you know, they know the NASCAR series and they know all of that. What exactly is the ARCA Racing Series?
The ARCA Series is the American Race Car Association, which is based out of the Midwest, based out of Ohio, Michigan, and it's been actually this is their 61st year in to be a full series. I think this was the 50th race at Daytona, but I have to double check on that. And I had all those debts this morning, and I just saw something shiny. I got distracted.
That's always fun. Now, you know, we were looking at your stats from last year, and from what we got, and you know, correct us if we're wrong. You had 5 races last year, you know, from Daytona and Mobile, and you know, Pocono. No wins, but you finished in the top 10 twice. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We actually were planning on a full season last year, and the race out in Salem in Indiana, I actually ended up breaking 2 ribs, and I broke my right foot, got a concussion in a wreck, and that kind of – I had to take a couple weeks out to recoup from that, especially with the ribs.
Mm-hmm.
We had actually the following week went to Talladega, and I just had fractured ribs. Then I completely cracked them in the race in Talladega. So
Wow.
At that point, they told me I had to take a couple weeks off. So.
So basically, that's why the stats from 2010 were a little light that we looked at.
Yeah, well, from 2012.
Oh, yeah, excuse me, for 2012. Because 2011, we looked at, you had about 19 races, I believe, the season before.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the goal then, Sean, is to put in a full schedule this year?
Well, we don't know. We ended up saving up money. We did 2 truck races last year.
Right.
And with the Camping World Truck Series.
Yes.
And right now we're actually gearing up our haulers back in North Carolina. We're switching out the ARCA cars, loading up the trucks, and coming back down to do the truck races this Friday.
Okay. Okay. So how many of the truck races do you plan on doing?
The truck races right now, 4 to 6. Really,
okay.
We're going to try to stay under that rookie status. Now we got sponsored for 4 definitely, and we have some stuff on the line to possibly do 2 more, and that'll put us, I think, 7 and over. We won't be eligible to be a rookie next year. So
right, okay. Now I'm still trying to get a handle on, and you know, Jonathan knows I'm kind of the racing fan here. I've been following NASCAR and NHRA now for quite a few years. I'm still trying to get a handle. What exactly is the difference between ARCA and that series and, say, Nationwide or the Sprint Cup series?
Well, the biggest difference is the ARCA series actually uses the cars from before they went with the COT cars.
Gotcha.
They're actually the old, I guess, the car yesterday. But
yeah, as opposed to the car of tomorrow.
Yeah, as opposed to the car of tomorrow with the wing or the wing or the spoiler. Or the current COT car, the Gen 6.
Gen 6, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, they're really just the old cars. That's all the old technology, really, from 2007 and before. And the Nationwide cars were able to use the Nationwide cars for everything up to super speedways, and then we have to use the old Cup cars for super speedways. But we can use the old Cup cars for any track that's not a super speedway. We can go to Pocono and use an old Nationwide car, which is the only difference between really the old style Nationwide cars and the Cup cars. There's a 5-inch difference in the wheelbase.
Okay.
So one was a 105-inch wheelbase and the other one's a 110-inch wheelbase.
Obviously the cars that you're driving are heavier than what we're seeing right now, particularly in the new Gen 6 models.
Yeah, I mean our cars we have to make up a lot with ballast weight, with lead weights, and pretty much everybody has to come in around 3,500 pounds per race.
Okay. What kind of speeds are you? What would you? I guess put it this way: what's the top speed you've run your car at?
Actually, last year I know we were really faster at Michigan when we went up there with the newly repaved track.
Okay.
And the track was actually, we were doing 217 at the end of the front stretch in Michigan, and we weren't even the fastest car. The fastest car, I believe, was around 223.
Wow.
I mean, that would break my ribs.
But yeah, they end up really slow us down, because if you just think about what an airplane takes off at, it's around 140, 160. So really going that fast, one accident could result in the car flying. So. But they had to slow us down for that race and a bunch of other races and tracks that were repaved and redone, that the speeds were really kind of insane last year.
Okay. So, Sean, let me ask you this real quick, because we were on the EmpireRacingLLC.com website, and, I'm not the racing guy here. Mike is. So I'm kind of out of the loop when it comes to certain things. But one of the things I wanted to ask you was, what got you into racing? Because looking on the site, I see your father. He owns a transportation company, basically buses and stuff. So, you know, is there anybody within the family that was in racing, or this was just something that you always loved to do?
Well, I just kind of got into it a lot with riding with my dad, I guess, up and down the New York State Thruway. That's pretty much a race every day on its own. So, my dad was never into racing. My grandfather started a school bus transportation company back in 1955, so educational bus in Long Island.
Yes.
And pretty much we've always had school bus yellow running through our blood, and I just, I don't know, I kind of got into racing, I guess, just something I turned on the TV one day when I was younger and kind of got hooked on it. But
yeah,
I started my racing career out at the Orange County Fair Speedway in Middletown, New York. And to start out in the pure stock, I found something out one day looking through the newspaper and saw a $1,200 street stock car. And that's really how I caught the bug on it. So.
Sounds to me, Jonathan, like Sean figured he'd race a car as opposed to racing a school bus. That's what it sounds like.
Well, it's funny you say that. I actually... They do a race every year with a school bus race. It's kind of a back-to-school bus bash kind of
nice.
Deal.
Yeah.
And I've won, I think, 7 of the 10 of them that they've had. I have a big old school bus with a big block Chevy engine in it. So
I'd love to see that. I think that would be a riot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you could reach 217 in the school bus, though, right?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you, the idiot light on the dashboard, there is an overspeed light, and it is on.
That's great. That's great.
So what, going forward, Sean, let's hope you can get a full season, and what would be your goal for this year?
Just to maintain, keep trying to get a couple more top fives, really.
Okay.
I mean, we're really underfunded to do a full season in ARCA or Truck Series, so we're just kind of breaking it up and really just judging our money wisely for each race. So we're very lucky we have a complete ARCA car to go to Talladega with. So I think I have one rub mark really on the right rear quarter panel that we have to fix up, and then that car will be ready for competition again.
I'm hearing some of the same types of things. We talked to John Capps on Friday from NHRA. John's currently not running because, of course, he's having difficulty getting sponsorship. I'm hearing kind of the same things from you guys. This has been an ongoing problem with auto racing, particularly more recently in getting and maintaining sponsorship. What do you have to do in order to get and keep your sponsors?
Really, the biggest thing is to just anytime they have a kind of a fan meet and greet, and even if it's optional, there's right down to going in the grandstands after the races and handing out, you know, autographed hero cards. It's just getting your name out there is the biggest thing. It's a lot of times you go in with a sponsorship proposal, and a lot of people go, "Who's Sean Corr?"
Yeah, right.
The biggest thing is to try to get somewhat of a noticed name. But that's really the biggest thing I can try to promote is just get your name out there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any plans, any goals on your part to at some point, and obviously this is going to be sponsor driven, but to make the jump over to NASCAR?
Well, right now we're okay in the Truck Series. I'm kind of I would one day like to do a full season in the Truck Series, and that's really kind of where we're putting our goals right now. And who knows what might come along down the road and give us opportunities to run in some of the other series. But right now, our goal is to definitely try to do a full season one year in the Truck Series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely sounds good. So so Friday night at what is that, the NextEra race that you're racing in?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Okay, good. All right, we just want to make sure so we can have everybody watch it because it is going to be on Speed Television at 8:30 this Friday night, February 22nd. So check out Sean Corden, the number 82 car. Sean, you know, seriously, thank you so much for joining us today, and hopefully one day in the future we can have you back on and everyone will know the name Sean Corden. That would
absolutely be
the best.
Yeah. Hey, is it okay if I give a shout out to my crew out there?
Absolutely.
Up in Mooresville, and some of the guys are still hanging out down here in Daytona. So just want to kind of give a shout out to them. They've been great all off season and all throughout the Daytona race. We definitely couldn't have gotten our great top five finish the other day without them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. Once again, Sean, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your top five finish on Saturday, and we hope to talk to you once again in the future.
Okay, great, guys. Thank you again for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right, bye.
Take care.
Interesting stuff. It's nice to, hear from a younger guy in the sport, Mike. Somebody, that kind of stressed the same thing as John Capps did on Friday, that everything is just sponsor-driven. Without the sponsors, unfortunately, these guys can't, really utilize their talents to their best and be able to run a full series in a full season.
Yeah, and it's having more and more of an impact, Jonathan, on auto racing right now, simply because of, the economic climate.
And it's not cheap to do. So I mean, it's.
Well, no, I've heard.
Yeah, you really can't blame certain companies for not wanting to get involved because, as we heard from John Capps, I mean, what did he say? Like $1.5 million to $2 million just to run
right.
for a season.
Right, and really, when it comes right down to it, we were talking about that here last night at the frat house as we were watching the the round of this week's NHRA races, and. At $1.5 million to $2 million for a funny car, that's stripped down. That's bare bones.
Yeah.
There are some of these teams that are running with budgets per car are probably anywhere from $5 to $5+ million per car.
Yeah.
So it's obviously it's not a cheap thing to be doing, and it's difficult to get these things.
Oh, absolutely.
So, all the best to Sean there. I think it would be really cool if we could see him make that leap later on at some point over to say Nationwide or something. But obviously, it's going to be driven by dollars.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to check out Sean, he's racing in the NextEra Energy Resources 250 at the Daytona International Speedway this Friday night. 8:30 p.m. you can watch on Speed Television, and if you don't know what channel Speed TV is on your TV, just check your local listings and you'll find it. It should be a good one. That's the NASCAR Camping World Truck race for Friday night.
And his website is EmpireRacingLLC.com. EmpireRacingLLC.com.
Correct.
Yes,
and one of the main, people behind them is also Warriors in a Work and Warriors in a Workplace, which is a very good outfit as well. So
yeah, if anybody wants to help sponsor, so jump over to that website.
Yeah, Sean's a good kid. Empire Racing has been very good with us over the last few weeks, and it would be nice to see them go far, Mike. It really would be.
Absolutely.
All right, Mike. So continue with the trend here and keeping with racing. We had a lot of stuff going on this weekend with races. We had something happened in NASCAR that we've never seen happen before, Mike, that we got to see on Saturday. So I'm going to give you the mic, and I want you to do a little rundown on some of the, great stuff that happened this weekend in racing.
Well, first of all, on Saturday night, we had the Sprint Unlimited, which is the old Budweiser shootout exhibition race with 19. This year it had 19 drivers in it. They were all previous pole winners from last season. Not necessarily race winners, but pole winners. 75 laps. It's an exhibition race, and it kicked off. There was a lot of excitement going into that race on Saturday night because it was the first time that we were actually going to get a look at the new Gen 6 models. Now, we're going to be talking a lot about the Gen 6 models on Wednesday when we have Steve Nelson on. But it's the first time we as fans actually got to see all of them out there on the track in real competition. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of excitement over that. In the end, Kevin Harvick won that particular exhibition. I think the no points awarded in this. It's an exhibition.
Yeah.
But I believe the grand prize is like $200,000. And, you know, we're just talking about money, how driven this whole sport is by money. When you're talking about a $200,000 payday, that's big time.
Yeah, you need it.
Yep.
You need it.
Yep. And these guys come out, and in an exhibition race, you know, we were just talking about, you know, Jonathan, all-star races and exhibitions and exhibition games, you know, things like the NBA All-Star Game, and how there's really very little effort put into these things, you know. But when you get into racing, these guys drive, man. They drive, and they don't care whether it's exhibition. Because
yeah.
when you're talking about $200,000, they're going for it. And that was the case as Tony Stewart ended up taking a bunch of cars out in the 15th lap. Lap 15, there he cut off Marcus Ambrose, and that created a chain reaction. Bam, there must have been at least 8-9 cars taken out of the entire race at that point.
Wow.
So even in exhibition, you're going to see this sort of thing going on. So that was the first thing that took place. Yesterday, we had the final qualifying for the upcoming Daytona 500, which, as I pointed out on Saturday here when we were talking a little bit about racing, the Daytona 500 is kind of – it's referred to in auto racing in NASCAR as the Super Bowl of NASCAR, which is interesting because they kind of kick off their season with the big, big, big event. And so yesterday was the final qualifying for pole positions and that sort of thing. For the drivers that will be participating in that next Sunday. And you were just making reference to it. Danica Patrick became the first woman ever in the history of Daytona to win the pole position for Daytona.
That's great.
She had the fastest run of any of the drivers at, I believe she was clocked in at around 196 miles an hour going around Daytona. So, you know, the media and what have you kind of making a big deal of it. I don't know. I'm not really sure if it's all that big a deal, but the media is making to do about it that Danica won the poll. But first woman to do so. So it was very interesting because what did I – I think I pointed it out. I might have said – I forget who I sent a note to. I sent a note over to Sidekick. That's who it was.
Yeah.
I sent a note over to Sidekick. Her odds of winning the Daytona 500 prior to yesterday's pole qualifying, all right, where she actually got the pole,
mm-hmm.
her odds of winning it were 150 to 1, Jonathan.
Whoa.
Okay, now, after getting the top spot and winning the pole position yesterday, her odds in Vegas dropped to 15 to 1.
15 to 1.
15 to 1.
Hmm.
Yep. So sometimes that top spot can mean an awful lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, just to get there and, you know, I mean, just the history behind it as well
mm-hmm.
is something big for NASCAR. And I'm sure NASCAR is very happy that happened. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure NASCAR is just loving this to get the kind of attention that they're getting, you know. And I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot about that on Thursday on 5 Minutes at the Proud House from Sidekick because he has a lot to say about that sort of thing. So we'll wait and see what his comments are on it. And real quick, I'll give one little quick update because we did have John Capps on Friday. NHRA, they had their final heats yesterday for the Winter Nationals. These the first races. And in the, first of all, in the funny car division, Ron Capps did make it. Ron Capps, John's older brother, did make it to the final round elimination, running up against Courtney Force of John Force Racing. This is Courtney's second year running the funny car division. Courtney won that race, so Ron came in second place. Just real quick too, in the top fuel dragster division, Tony Schumacher went up against Sean Langdon in the final round out there at the Winter Nationals, and Sean Langdon won that one. That was a little bit of an upset as well. I kind of thought Tony Schumacher would take that.
Very nice, very nice. So,
and there's our racing update for today.
Yeah, real exciting weekend for NASCAR and racing in general. So.
Yeah, Yep.
Real good stuff.
Next week will be the same because, I mean, you know, you'll have the official then kicking off of the Daytona 500.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do a rundown of that during the week when it happens. Before we get into our next segment here, let's just bring in a phone call now. You know, and we apologize for waiting so long during our guest line. But Big Joe from the Bronx, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Joey.
What are you stuck out in the wind, Joe?
Man, it's a little cold out here, a little windy, but you know, typical February day here in New York.
It's windy everywhere.
So what's going on, buddy? What's on your mind, man?
Nah, I love the racing talk, man. It's pretty awesome. It's a fun time of year for race fans, that's for sure. You know, I checked out what was formerly known as the Budweiser Shootout the other night. That was fun to watch, especially when Tony Stewart got into that, started that chain reaction accident, as Mike put it. It's, you know, that's what racing is all about, man, the competitiveness. I love it.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, Danica Patrick doing her thing. I mean, kudos to her. Although you have a lot of people, the whole conspiracy, you know, theorists out there thinking this is purposely made. It was purposely set up for her to win, you know, because of the whole economic situation with the, you know, the, like what you guys are talking about, the lack of sponsorship and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, if Danica Patrick succeeds, all of a sudden NASCAR and, you know, as a whole moves up the notch in terms of publicity. You know,
yeah.
I mean, ESPN will be all over that. I mean, they already are talking about Danica Patrick left and right on ESPN.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, it's a shame that people are thinking that this was purposely set up for her to win because, I mean, she's a true talent. And even though I'm a Dale Jr. fan, but, you know, I'm happy for her. She did her thing.
Yeah, yeah. She definitely had a good race. She deserved to where she goes. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of people out there that really don't particularly care for her. I guess Sidekick would be one of them, Mike.
Well, it's not and I don't want to go putting words in Sidekick's mouth. I mean, I prefer him to – no, seriously.
I know, because he's in the chat room, so I'm messing with him. Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, if he wants to call in, I'd be more than happy to have him jump on the line and he can
absolutely
give it. But I don't want to put words – it's not – I wouldn't say that Sidekick doesn't like her or hates her. I think Sidekick's issue is more to the extent that NASCAR uses her.
Yeah, which I'm sure they do. You know, in their own way, I'm sure they do.
That's no different than what I think any other sport would do. Any other sport would do exactly the same thing. They're going to capitalize on those things that are different or unique.
Absolutely.
Or going to get attention.
Absolutely, and you know what? That has happened before in almost every sport. So.
You know, it's called marketing, guys. It's called marketing. You got to take advantage of the talent that you have. And if you have somebody that can sell products for you, you know, someone who's good looking, and she's obviously very good looking, then why not maximize that? You have to. I mean, bottom line is NASCAR is a business. They want to make profits. And if Danica Patrick is doing well on the racetrack, then that makes it easier for them to market her and be very successful going forward.
Bob Parsons and GoDaddy. That's why they jumped on the Danica Patrick bandwagon, you know, many moons ago because they saw something special with her and they knew that, you know, eventually she was going to be the face of a lot of things. And, you know, kudos to them for doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
I knew when she first came on the scene, I told people, I was like, within 5 years, she will be in NASCAR. I knew that was in her future, you know, when she came into Formula One racing and whatnot.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, again, she's on the way to big things. Will she win any races? Well, that's to be determined. But, you know, the bottom line is she's on her way to a successful career in NASCAR. And good for her for that.
Yeah.
Well, I think having a car out there running 196 and nobody else was able to keep up with it, I think the closest to her yesterday was Jeff Gordon. To have a car that's running that well, you got to give some credit to the crew over there. They finally got her. They may have gotten her into a car that she's going to be able to perform in.
Well, you know, NASCAR is a team effort. Your pit crew, everybody from the top to bottom. If you got a good crew, you know, then you're going to be. Your odds are you'll be a very successful racer.
Yep.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the racer alone and their ability to drive the car and everything. It's a whole team effort, and it looks like she has a good team on her hands.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Hey,
all right,
Jonathan, real quick, what's the status with Powell, with the Rangers, with his situation? He looks like he's definitely had a concussion.
Nothing yet, but, you know, general consensus is that it looked like a concussion, you know, from that collision with him. He was placed on the IR, and the Rangers did call up Brandon Mashinter today. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There you go.
Yep. So, all right, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling in, buddy. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks, Joey.
Okay.
All right, Mike. Well, I know you got the updated top 25 NCAA rankings, so go for it, man.
They just got released, so we can kind of call this breaking news. Right now up at the top, Indiana stays at the top at number one. I'm kind of a little bit surprised by that. Miami jumps up to number two, had previously been number three. Gonzaga, holy smokes, they're amazing. Amazing. This team has just snuck up. I don't know if you remember, Jonathan, just a number of weeks ago, in fact, more than a number of weeks ago, we had Leak Line on. He was talking about Gonzaga, and he said, watch them. Gonzaga now up to number three from number five. Michigan State moves back up into the number four spot. Duke tumbled all the way down to number six from number two. Let's see, any other really, really big surprises here? Kansas jumped up to number 9 from number 14. Louisville's in there in the top 10 now. Louisville is in the top 10. Rick Pitino's team moved up from number 12. Who was not ranked? VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, was not ranked last year. They broke the top 25 this week, and they are at number 24. And my favorite team, Notre Dame, dropped back down to number 25.
Wow, look at that, man.
Yep.
All right.
So that's just a brief synopsis of it. If you want the entire list, head on over to NCAA.com, and you can get the full AP. These are the AP listings.
Well, that's amazing. Last time we were waiting for them, and we didn't get them for the show, and all of a sudden, boom, here they come right through the show. So.
Yep, we got them. Yep. Yep.
Great stuff. All right, man, let's move it over to a little NFL talk here, and we're not going to be talking about the game itself for players. We're going to be talking about the commissioner, Mike, and that's Roger Goodell. Report came out a couple of days ago that according to a league's recent tax return, that they show that Goodell himself made $29.49 million as commissioner. His base pay is $3.1 million, and he got $22.3 million in bonus, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's because he does such a good job, Jonathan.
Well, I'm sure he does. I guess you're the only one that thinks that. But but here's our question now. We spoke about this pre-show for quite a bit. Our question is, do commissioners deserve to make that type of money? In my mind, players don't even deserve to make that type of money. But as you said it, you know, here's football players going out and putting their lives on the line. Anything can happen to them, Mike. So they make that money. But should a guy sitting behind a desk, the commissioner himself, who's really not a light commissioner and doesn't really do that great of a job, does he deserve that type of pay, Mike?
Yeah.
I did
bring it up a little bit on Saturday on my 5-minute show here on Fan Junkies Radio Network. I did bring it up a little bit there. And I want this clearly understood. I'm not going to bash Roger Goodell. I really don't have an opinion about the man one way or another. I don't hate him. I don't like him. All right? It's
that simple.
Yeah, really. You know, I'm right down the middle on it. I mean, you know, I made the comment, somebody like Bud Selig, I really, really don't like. Can't wait to see him go bye-bye. But Goodell, I really don't have an opinion about. But I do have an opinion on somebody making $29.5 million, particularly in the structure, as you just pointed out, that it is being laid down. When you're making a $22.3 million bonus, what does the word bonus mean to you, Jonathan? Isn't that like an award?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it should be an award. It's supposed to be an award.
I mean, so, you know, we're going to give you a bonus because you did such a great job. $22.3 million? No, that's, first of all, it's ridiculous. Put this into perspective when, as I pointed out, you reiterated it there, the top paid player right now in the NFL is Drew Brees getting $20 million a year.
Wow.
And you've got Goodell making 29.5.
Wow.
What's wrong with this picture?
I don't know. I don't know, man. It's not good. But at the same time, we looked at all the other commissioners in sports. And, you know, Bud Selig is still ranked number one, still makes the most money. I would love to see his most recent tax return to see exactly where he is, but you got to think he is in the 30s by now, Mike.
You would think.
You know, I know in 2011 we had to hear Bud Selig pulled in $18.4 million, Roger Goodell $10.9 million, David Stern $10 million even, Gary Bettman $7.5 million. So Bud Selig actually made more than Gary Bettman and Roger Goodell combined in 2011.
Yep. Yep.
Now, after 2012, you would have to think that he's definitely up there in the 30s if Roger Goodell is in the high 20s.
Well, I'd like to see Bettman's right about now. You know, I certainly hope for this season he's getting nothing.
Well, you know he is, so he's definitely getting something, and it's definitely not nothing. He's making good money, Gary Bettman.
Oh, we know it. We know it.
It's a real shame that he is, but at the same time, what can we do about it? Well, I know what we could do about it, but that's never going to happen, Mike. So.
Well, here's the other thing that I want everybody to just consider for a moment, okay? And it was pointed out in many of the articles that I read where Goodell's recent compensation was released.
Yes.
And I've got an article up here from USA Today, but Yahoo reported on it, and SI reported on it. So there were numerous outlets that reported on his compensation. How in the world did we get hold of this information? Well, we got hold of it because of, as you pointed out, a tax return.
Yes.
But that tax return had to be made public because of the fact, and I want everybody to think about this for a moment. The NFL is a nonprofit organization. They're a 501c3. And under the regulations and rules set down by the federal government, if you're a 501c3 nonprofit, you have to release your tax return publicly.
Yes.
The NFL is a nonprofit. Well, somebody's profiting.
Well, somebody's right? Definitely profiting.
Okay.
Well, I know when you look at the MLB and the NBA, their returns are not put out to the public.
I don't know what their structure is.
Because they are structured as for-profit groups.
Okay.
That's why they're not out there. But it's believed that both David Stern and Bud Selig make in the mid-$20 million range as of last year. As of 2011 going into 2012. So now what had they made from 2012 going into 2013 now?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real question.
Well, I spent many, many years in support of and working with nonprofit organizations all across this country. And in fact, I own a company that worked with nonprofits. And to me, I find something absolutely disdainful about the top CEO of any nonprofit making this kind of a disgusting amount of money.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what the funny thing is, too, because I'm reading something here from 2011. Jeff Posch, who is a executive for the NFL, he made $8.8 million in 2011. NFL Network President and CEO Steve Bornstein, he made around $5.7 million. So it's, you know what, they're not that far off from NHL commissioner's pay.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe, maybe we can hire them.
Exactly. I don't know. Maybe some people are copacetic with it. I for one, am not. As I pointed out, this guy's not going out. He gets to sit in a plush box, you know, on Sunday afternoons and probably have somebody bring, his food and beverages brought to him. Probably have somebody to wipe his glasses like Jones does. You know?
That was pretty funny.
And this guy's getting $30 million a year. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do, right? It's a real shame, but at the same time, I'm not shocked, Mike. You know, and I haven't been over the salaries of anybody within professional sports for many, many years now. So, and it's only going to go up. It keeps going up. You know, when does it finally hit that ceiling when people say, you know what, enough is enough because this is too much, you know?
Well, I guess the question becomes, will we ever? Because when we're talking about something, and you know, we've brought this kind of thing up before. When it comes to our sports, particularly football, there's so many things we turn a blind eye to. And so, therefore, the question becomes, will we ever really, I guess, maybe give a damn enough that, you know, you've got the commissioner of our favorite sport, you know, being paid and kind of a disgusting amount of money. I don't think we're really going to care, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Mike, let's stay with the football trend here, real quick. Something I just read. Matt Barkley, USC quarterback, who's going into the NFL draft.
Yes.
He's not going to throw at the combine. Now, you know, we already knew that his stock was hurting for the NFL draft.
Yeah.
by now, him not throwing at the combine, I mean, general consensus that that's going to drop him into the second round.
Well, okay, I got two theories. Just go ahead, continue on with you.
Well, my question is, from what you've seen from Matt Barkley, and we've spoken about him quite a bit, and I know you're not really a super huge fan of Matt Barkley, but at the same time, you know, he's probably an average quarterback. We don't know what he can be in the NFL yet. Matt Barkley going into the second round, if that happens and he comes back healthy, could that be a steal for our team?
I think, again, we go back to what the atmosphere is right now this year, and I brought it up numerous times. There is a dearth of quarterbacks available through the draft and through free agency. Absolutely, it could be a steal.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the reasoning is for why he's not going to.
Because of his separated shoulder.
Okay.
That he suffered last season. They're saying that it's going to prevent him from throwing, but he will. He hasn't decided if he's going to run and jump for any of the teams yet, but he's definitely not going to throw.
Okay, so we're still – the belief here is that we're still in healing from that? Is that what this is all about?
Basically, yes. But, I mean, the combine is all about – I mean, you're a quarterback. You know what I mean? Jumping in, you know, running is a part of it, but at the same time, throwing is 95% of white.
That's what everybody wants to see. Like,
exactly. So, I mean, you have to think, if nobody's going to watch him, you really think somebody would take a waiver on him in the first round?
You know, can I be honest with you? Here's the first thing I thought of when you're bringing this story up, and I haven't had the benefit of seeing it. You're bringing it to me for the first time.
Yeah.
Here's the first thing that crossed my mind when you're saying this, that he's not going to throw at the combine. Is there something in the works already where somebody has already indicated to him, don't sweat it, you don't have to do anything, we're going to pick you here in the draft?
I wonder.
You know, that's the first thing that crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Is, you know, has some team already indicated, Matt, don't worry about it, you don't have to perform at the combine, don't bust your ass, because here's what we're going to do. We're going to pick you. You'll be picked in the first round. We're going to take you, I don't know, 18. We're going to take you at 20.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this now, too, because I was reading a little bit about this earlier. You know what? With mostly all the quarterback stock, you know, just dropping, you know, that we're seeing in mock report stuff, I mean, could this be a draft where in the first round we probably – I mean, of course, Geno Smith, everybody thinks very highly of Geno Smith. But is there something where we're not going to see any quarterbacks picked till late in the first round, maybe not at all in the first round?
I can't believe that, Jonathan, because as I pointed out, and you know, and we've lined them up before, we've listed down the number of teams that are looking for quarterbacks and need a quarterback.
That's why I find it hard to believe.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I think the longer that some of them stick around on there, I think somebody, you know, there would be a team out there that perhaps doesn't have as big a need that would go and jump on one of them,
yeah,
if for no other reason than to put a second stringer on their bench.
Yeah.
So I find it difficult to believe that you know, a team like Kansas City wouldn't be in the conversation. A team like your Jets,
yeah,
wouldn't be in the conversation for a first round quarterback pick. I find that difficult to believe. But I don't know. I mean, you know, you're right. You know, as we continue to look at mock drafts and as they continue to come out, we're seeing some of these guys dropping further and further and further down the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I guess we'll find out, right?
Yes. What's the name that I keep hearing? You know, suddenly the flavor of the week. I'm trying to remember the name. Is it EJ? EJ Manuel? Is that the name I keep hearing?
I was hearing, what's the name? The quarterback from Syracuse a lot lately. I mean, listen, man, you got the Mike Glennons and you got the Tyler Wilsons that you're going to hear about.
Right.
But at the same time, the quarterback from Syracuse, I've been hearing a lot of things about lately. A lot of teams are thinking highly of him all of a sudden. So.
Yeah, EJ Manuel is the guy that I keep hearing. And suddenly he's been the name that has been kind of propelled to the top of the draft list.
Florida State, right? He's from?
Yes, Florida, yeah. State. Played for the Seminoles. And suddenly his name now is getting like the number one status in QBs coming out of the draft. You know, this thing's going to continue to evolve. And as I pointed out, it's almost like the flavor of the week sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you take a look at even last year, it was almost a given that it was going to be Andrew Luck going first.
Yeah.
You know, but then all of a sudden RG3 comes into the picture and everybody's talking RG3. Now, RG3 was not being talked about if you recall, until near the end of the NCAA season last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was not being talked about in the early part of the season. Nobody
no, he wasn't.
About Robert Griffin III.
No. I never even heard of that guy. So.
Exactly.
The funny thing is, I'm just looking at some of your senior analyst, Gil Brandt from NFL.com. He, basically did a scoreboard here on air yards, rusher points, total passing statistics. Geno Smith finished first with 93. E.J. Manuel, second with 88. Landry Jones from Oklahoma, third at 79. And then, as I was saying, Ryan Nassib from Syracuse. Finished before Barkley, before Glennon, before everybody else. So, you know what? I mean, I guess it looks like that Nassib and Manuel stock is really rising here.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't remember Nassib's name. Yeah, Ryan Nassib. He's a local kid. He's from Westchester, right here in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area.
Right, same, and that's the guy I said I like to see go to the Jets. So.
Yeah. I was kind of rooting for him. I was kind of rooting for him for a possible uptick for the Eagles.
Yeah. All right, we'll see what happens, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to change a lot more, Jonathan, before we come to draft day for sure.
Absolutely. All right, man, we got a little over 4 minutes left. So real quick, before the end of the show here, we got to talk a little NHL. Chicago Blackhawks still undefeated on the season. They're 12-0-3, Mike. They tied the Edmonton Oilers for the second longest season opening point streak in NHL history. On Tuesday, they play Vancouver. They have the opening right there to tie the top record set by Anaheim in 06-07. I mean, seriously, real quick, nobody saw this from Chicago.
No, nobody did. And, you know, I've often sat back for the past couple of weeks and asked myself, is this a phenomena of the shortened season? And yet I can't seem to qualify that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I pointed out to you, Jonathan, pre-show, they've played 15 games. 10 of those have been on the road. They're 8-0-2 on the road, 4-0-1 at home.
Amazing, Mike. Amazing.
And here's the thing that's going to be really, really, as a result of the fact they've played so many now on the road, the vast majority of their games for the next 15 are going to be played at home.
At home?
Yep.
Wow. Wow. So you got to see, are they going to be good at home or do they need to stay on the road to keep going?
I hear you. Look at the goal differential though, Jonathan. 20 plus 20 goal differential. 51 goals for, 31 goals against.
Amazing, man. They're just playing phenomenal.
Yep.
Phenomenal. Eventually
absolutely.
They'll lose, but who knows when. So all right, Michael, that's basically it for today's show. Real good show. We want to thank Sean Core and the gang over at Empire Racing and of course Warriors in the Workplace for setting everything up today so we can have Sean Core join us from Daytona here today.
Yep.
And don't forget, Sean Core is racing again Friday night. You can watch on Speed TV, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, as he's in the NASCAR truck series. So take a look for that. Also, Wednesday, continuing with the trend, we have Steven Nelson from Freescale Semiconductor at freescale.com. He's going to be on to talk about the logistics of the cars in NASCAR and a lot of other things. I know, Mike, you're really excited about this one.
I am, yeah. This could be a really good one. This could be really interesting.
Absolutely. And also, talking about Danica Patrick winning this weekend, we have Lauren Bush on Friday, Teen Phenom. We're going to talk to her about females in racing,
yep.
Especially in a male-dominated sport. And, Danica won it at the right time because we'd love to talk to Lauren about that and also get her take on where her future is headed in racing. Awesome girl, very, very nice girl. We're definitely excited to have her on here to end NASCAR week on Friday.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. As always, check out our very own Frat House Mike here at frathousesports.net and just watch the 5 minutes at the Frat House. Great stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Always here on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Mike.
3 o'clock. Yes.
3 o'clock. So check that out. And as always, FanJunkies.net. Check it out. We really appreciate it. So once again, for Mike McShane and, I'm Jonathan Ragus. I'm the host here for Fan Junkies Radio. We just thank everybody for listening, for making us one of the fastest growing podcasts on the internet today. We couldn't do it without you. So make sure you tune in Wednesday, and we'll see you all then.
See you then.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.